How's that looking to you?
Pretty good, I think.
Look at that. You can see your face in those shoes now.
They're shining.
Yeah, but these are suede.
Will not be presented at this time.
You want me to shine your other shoe, too?
So we may bring you this special podcast.
How about your socks?
No, thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News.
It's time for Peculiar Podcast, hosted by Pat Cashman.
Gorgeous to look at.
And Lisa Foster.
She's dangerous.
See, you're on.
Ready or not, it's Pat and Lisa.
Yeehaw! Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
It's love and time.
All right, here we go. Let's get this rodeo started. Come on, you little doggies. Get along. Come on.
Move along, little doggies.
Wait a minute. Those actually are doggies. Where are
yes.
the horses?
They're in the barn.
Okay. Well, thanks. All right. So I don't know where they came up with the doggies thing for cattle. I just remember, and I don't know if I ever told you about this, but back in the day when I was a kid.
Back in the day.
You know, I must
Boy, that was back in the day when yeah. you were a kid.
Saying back in the day, I was 19, 20, maybe 12 years old, and I got hired on to herd a bunch of cattle. We took them from down here in Central Oregon all the way down to Tulsa, Oklahoma, cross country.
Really? Yeah. You did?
Yeah.
Were you in a covered wagon of some sort?
No. We booked all these cattle onto a couple of three Alaska Airlines flights.
And then you took an Uber and met him there.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Cattle driving's different than it used to be. Yeah,
I guess sounds like it.
Much more, a lot more frills nowadays. Well, here we are again to do this thing again. Good to talk to you. You've been okay. I hope you have some horrific stories to tell us.
Well,
coming up
no,
a little short here.
I don't really have anything. I've been dealing now. I don't want to get into it.
Who All right.
Here's what I will tell you. Let me nutshell it for you.
Okay.
I could be dying, or I might be okay. There.
Okay. Well, I don't mean to be too lugubrious here, but we're all dying, aren't we? Don't they tell us that the minute you're born, you're checking out?
But I mean this week.
Like, I'm asking for late checkout, by the way. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got some weird things that came up in a blood test that were apparently, it's alarming when your doctor calls you in the middle of a 3-day holiday weekend.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And you're like, doctor, why are you calling? Well, I've seen some things in your, that I don't like. And I'm, and nobody knows what it is they don't like yet. So then that's another round of let's take more blood from her and pee into all these cups and do all this and it's the
well,
unknown.
I see some things I do like here though.
Like what?
is that your natural hair color or whatever it is? It looks really nice.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, yeah, those things are where I'm gonna do the old pep talk here and tell you everything will be fine.
I know.
It's,
I love
it's
you
good.
For that.
It's good to, you know, it's good to every once in a while get yourself checked out again and make sure that you are all right. You know, I hope I'm not telling stories out of school here, but you're 93 years old now, Lisa. You have to figure that some things are going to go wrong.
That's true. Things are going to wear out. Yeah. Things are going to not operate correctly. Yeah. I mean, I'm just surprised I made it to 93. So anyway, so I think I'll be fine. We'll just see. I am planning on, I'm very excited because I'm planning to pop in and get a little visit with two of my favoritest people on the planet, and that is Pat and Patty Cashman.
Yes, you're going to come out here to Central Oregon.
I'm going to come out there in a few weeks. As I said, depending on how these tests go, I may arrive in a body bag, but will you still pick me up at the airport?
Yes. Okay. Well, it'll actually be a lot easier. There won't be that awkward conversation from the airport to hear.
Yeah, because we never have anything to talk about.
No.
Ever.
Okay, you're going to be just fine.
I'm going to be just fine. Thank you for saying that, but okay. I'll be fine.
All right.
Carry
you know
on.
You know what I said to my wife? She reminded me of this, and now she reminds me often that I said this. I don't remember the occasion. I think we were falling asleep one night, and I said, and this is a direct quote, I don't remember what we were talking about, but I know I was right.
That's great.
I
love
don't
that.
Remember what we were talking about, but all I know is I was right. Now, how do you think that went over?
Did she mention how she responded to that?
No, but I did wake up the next morning with some stab wounds.
You may be right. I may be crazy. But it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. Turn out the lights. Don't try to save me. You may be wrong for all I know, but you may be right.
I talked to some folks yesterday. We went to dinner with a really lovely couple, and they listened to the podcast. And I got some advice.
Oh, good. We need some advice.
Well, I know.
I can't believe we've been trying to do this by ourselves for so long. Who let us loose? We need supervision.
Well, so, as you know, Lisa, please. I've been wrestling with this whole approach in our podcast to lead with dearly departed. The dead people. And now it's kind of become a thing of this podcast. I'm wrestling with it. Should I drop it? I'm not trying to be a creepy, but I think when people check out, you know, pretty soon nobody talks about them anymore and they're in the rearview mirror. Yeah. No matter how we promise ourselves that we'll never forget them, you will. You will.
Or you won't
think about them as often anyway. So this is my little vainglorious attempt to give the dearly departed one last huzzah before they.
Well, this is after they've departed into the great unknown. So
yeah.
You need to do this stuff before they die is what I would recommend.
Well, that'd be a long list, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, if you had the ability to see who was going to croak next week, you could talk about them today is what I'm saying.
I used to do a bunch of awards, emceeing awards presentations. And very often they will have, as you know, they'll have like a lifetime achievement award, that kind of thing. And to me, and it's proven out to be true more often than not, to me, it is a sign that people think you're about to croak and they want to give you some recognition. So if you get a call and they say,
yes, we'd like you to show up at the presentation next month because we want to give you a lifetime achievement award.
You know what? I'm going to be tied up that day. I can't make it.
Well, we're still going to give it to you either way.
Could you maybe give it to somebody else? So if they do call you and say, hey, congratulations, we want to give you an award for your lifetime of effort and hard work, they're already measuring you for your casket. So just make an excuse. I can't make it. I'm sorry. It's very sweet of you, but I won't be able to be there.
The other thing, hold on though. The other thing that occurs to me when you say that is maybe they're not saying that you're going to die. Maybe they're saying there's really nothing else you're going to do after this that's going to make any difference. Mm,
that's a good point. That's certainly.
They're like, you've done everything. This is it. Here's your achievement, and you're not going to do anything great after that.
It is troublesome, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, you're still active and working and stuff, but I'm less so, and I don't like it. I think we all feel conflicted about so-called retirement, which I'm really not fully retired, but you think you become irrelevant, and that I guess that's the word I would think. And every good thing, every exciting thing, every creative thing, every meaningful thing has been in the rearview mirror for you now, and you're just waiting to get on board the bus to oblivion. Okay, and on that happy note.
That's such a, what a poetic, lovely way to say that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're holding your ticket. You're holding your ticket, just waiting for that bus to come along.
Don't you worry. There's a spot on it for you.
Hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road.
So the idea was that, as you know, a few podcasts ago, I tried an experiment where rather than bunch all of these, departed people, the obituaries up at the front of the podcast, I decided, well, I'm going to feather them throughout the podcast. It's an easier pill to swallow. Do you agree with that?
I remember that. And I don't agree with it. I would like
so
to
So you
know-
say you want to get it over with.
I want to know what your friends said, your friends that gave us advice on the podcast. What did they say?
Well, that was their idea. They said, we sort of like that. Yeah, they like that rather than do them all at once. Just work them in as if they're relevant to the conversation you're having at the time. We could be talking about anything, but I'll say that reminds me that, Davy Crockett just passed away at the Alamo,
Even if we're talking about pudding, you'll just say that.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, we could do that.
Okay. So let's do that. And then I'll try to work in a few passings along the way. It's been a little while. And I don't even remember what you and I were talking about, Lisa, but I know I was right.
I'm going to write that down. That's the best phrase ever.
That'll be hopefully in my eulogy. And we all remember when Pat said... When I was a kid, like all kids, you're insecure. You're not sure of where you stand, whether you're cool, what it would take to be popular. So you look at other kids that seem to have it all together.
Yeah.
And you, whether you intended it or not, you begin to imitate them. You might even try to dress like them, talk like them. And for me, part of it was how they walked. People in movies and people in real life. And I decided some people will just walk cool.
So mine was laughing. There was a girl.
Oh, I did that too. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a girl in my class whose laugh I just thought was so feminine and cute and pretty. And I sound like a donkey when I'm laughing.
No, you don't.
Yeah, great. I do. No, I don't. So I always
try. Yes, you do. No, you don't.
Hers was a little giggle. Hers was a little cute little chirpy giggle. I could never quite do it. But yeah, I tried to mimic her because everybody loved talking to her. And I thought, I need her laugh so people will like me. And I never could do it. So there you go.
Well,
was the walk. Interesting.
I also thought, I don't like the way I laugh. There's a podcast I listen to, and the host is great, except when he laughs. And he has one of those wheezy laughs. It isn't really like a laugh. He's like,
oh my God.
It's like
that's
that.
So cringy.
There's not any ha 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 ha. It's and I think, God,
I think I've told you about the guy I know. Hopefully they don't listen to the podcast. I don't think they do.
Oh, sure. Don't listen to the podcast. Go along with the crowd.
But the husband laughs like Woody Woodpecker. I am not exaggerating.
Like this? That's him?
Yes, that is him. And
Woody Woodpecker's voice was done by a woman. Do you think you should tell him that?
I don't know. I wouldn't even say, but I can hear him down the street and I go, there he is, Woody Woodpecker.
The creator of Woody Woodpecker was a guy named Walter Lantz, and his wife was the voice of Woody Woodpecker and did the laugh, too. as talented as he was, as beloved as he was, as magnetic and famous as he was, it is said that Giorgio Armani had a laugh like that. It'd be this Woody Woodpecker. He'd say, hey, I want to show you my luxury fashions. And then he'd do the laugh.
Yeah, that's so weird because he has such a sexy voice and accent. And then that laugh comes out of him.
His laugh gives him away. He was 91. Oh. And he died laughing.
Anyway, so the walk. Now, can I ask you a little more about this? Because don't guys want a more swagger than actually... were you trying to swagger? What were you trying to do with the walk thing you were changing? You walk perfectly fine, by the way. So what were you trying to change?
Oh, I don't think I walk perfectly fine. I have, as you know, I have knocked knees. Rather severe knocked knees. And I don't know what causes that. Somebody said, I bet you had rickets when you were a kid. I don't even know what that is. I said, well, you should have eaten more bananas and apples. That's what happened to you. I don't even know. But so I didn't like that. So there was a cool kid. He was a star running back for the high school football team, and he had the opposite of me. He had bow legs. Not too much, but a little more bow legged. So when he'd walk, he'd swing right and left and right and left, and he just, like, if he's walking down the hall, he's taking up the whole hall. Because he's just confident, and he walks cocky and confident. And I said, that's how I want to walk.
Oh,
I'm going to walk like that. But with knocked knees, I couldn't pull it off very well unless I walked on the sides of my feet. You know, the outside of my foot, I'd have to stand on that and walk. So I couldn't keep it up for very long.
Oh, my God.
But if there was, I saw like a cheerleader girl walking towards me, I'd assume the fake bow-legged walk and add a little more swagger.
Did that work?
Of course it didn't work.
There ain't nothing in the world like a bow-legged girl when she loves you. Yeah, there ain't nothing in the world like a bow-legged girl when she loves you.
And then I would try, you know, other kinds of walks that I thought. I remember Paul Newman in the movie Cool Hand Luke. I said,
man,
he walks cool. I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
So I tried to imitate. I've never been happy with my walk. But like you said, also the laughing thing.
Yeah.
I just thought I had an indistinctive laugh. And I used to be a fan of a guy. A lot of people wouldn't remember the name of a guy named Steve Allen. But he had a high-pitched laugh.
Yeah, I think this is your old Indian sportscaster.
But I decided, that's it. I'm going to switch my laugh.
Oh, my God.
And I summarily switched it in a moment. And all of a sudden, people are looking at me, why are you laughing like that all of a sudden, Cashman?
Yeah.
Laughing like what? Well, like the goofy way you're laughing. I'm not laughing goofy. You are.
That's my laugh, man.
Yeah, that's it. But it just speaks to the dissatisfaction everybody has.
I know.
With what they have. They're not comfortable. I mean, I don't care who you are. I'm sure. I wish I didn't have that weird nose. I wish I was a little taller, a little shorter, a little more muscular. Or mm-hmm. whatever. Yeah.
So. Yeah.
So I'm still working on that. I'm going to develop a laugh that I think will be satisfying both for the podcast and for my dealings with regular people.
You have a, do you have sort of like a catalog of laughs that you're sort of working through to see what you, first of all, what you can actually pull off, mm-hmm. and second of all, what you think sounds appealing. Yeah. Are you working, is that how you're working this? Or what
it's
are you,
funny
what are
you would
doing?
Bring that up because I've actually putting together a collection of laughs that I will be marketing for people who cannot decide on their laugh. This will be a compendium of some of the more popular laughs.
I love that.
Here's what I've gotten together so far.
It's the Pat Cashman Laugh Collection. Nothing but laughs, guffaws, giggles, chortles, and snickers. You also get titters, cackles, chuckles, and snickers. The Pat Cashman Laugh Collection. Buy it now for just $198. Buy it, and Pat Cashman will laugh all the way to the bank.
You know, Lisa, one way you can develop a good laugh is not to try and do it when you're completely sober and conscious. Oh.
I knew that.
Yeah, I think to get a good laugh, you have to be a little messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Which reminds me that half of the group Brewer and Shipley has passed away, Tom Shipley. And it reminds me that they had a big hit called One Toke Over the Line.
Oh, that's right.
1971.
One toke over the line, sweet Jesus. One toke over the line. Sitting downtown in a railway station. One toke over the line.
That was their big hit. They had some others, but that was their big hit. And then Tom Shipley.
Oh, yeah.
The song became so popular, it got to be number one. And they were just said, this is a stupid song. We stuck it on the album. We never intended it to be a single. But you never know what catches on. People loved it. Because it was one of those, you know, marijuana-smoking songs that people thought we can sneak this in underneath the door. No one will notice. And indeed, Lawrence Welk didn't notice what the lyrics were saying.
Right. I was going to mention that.
Yeah, and he pushed these couple named Gail Farrell and Dick Dale to sing this song, One Toke Over the Line, which is clearly about smoking weed. But Lawrence Welk didn't know that, and so he puts it on his popular television show.
One toke over the line, sweet Jesus, one toke over the line. Sitting downtown in a railway station, one toke over the line.
Which couldn't have been a more conservative values show. Lawrence Welk's show was.
And I'm trying to
unwittingly put this song on.
I'm trying to rack my brain on who the other very straight-laced, religious, white bread singer who was. Gosh, what was his name that did this song as well without knowing what it meant? Gosh, was it John Davidson or?
That sounds right. That sounds
I don't know. I can't remember. I'm going to try to look it up, but. Boy, he put his all into it, and I'll look it up and see if I can find it. But okay. It's just so funny that they're like.
If you find it, we'll play it at the end of this podcast.
Okay.
Tom Shipley, half of Brewer and Shipley, was 84.
Don't you know that we're a sitting downtown in a railway station? One toke over the line.
Notice here that Lawrence Welk calls it a spiritual.
And there you heard A Modern Spiritual by Gail and Dale.
I was watching a movie the other night, and it showed a woman. She gets knocked down, beat up by this guy. Then she's pushed off of a landing, and it's like a 12-foot drop. She lands onto a table that breaks. And then she rolls across, and there's an iron bar that she hits her head on.
Jesus, great. That's lovely.
And then she gets up, and what do you think she does as she gets up?
She kicks the guy in the bread basket.
No, she dusts herself off. Would that be your first instinct after you got, like you're in a car wreck, and you get out of the car, and it bursts into flames, and you dust yourself off?
And check your hair. And
just make sure, because the news crew's going to show up, and I don't want to look like,
exactly.
Because I'm going to be on TV.
Yeah. Dust yourself off.
There's nothing more about
I never dust myself off. Remember when we were riding bikes at your house and I fell off the bike? Do you remember?
Yes. I do.
We were in the home stretch. You made me take this stupid long bike ride. And I'm like,
now wait a minute. Now you're coming to visit again. So bike rides
are
out.
No, I'm fine now, but I was, you know. I was out of shape. I was not happy with my whole life. I'm fine now. I'll go on a bike ride with you. But I made it all the way home back to your house, and we have to get off the paved part of it because you have a little bit of a dirt path from the paved part to where you...
It's in the house, actually, the dirt path.
Where you park the bikes. And as soon as I got off the paved part, I just tipped over and fell off. Do you remember me getting up and dusting myself off? No, I laid there waiting.
Yeah. You were after an hour and a half, I said, I got to go out.
And Patty went inside. You're like, she'll be fine. Yeah,
enough is enough. I got to go out there and help her.
No, I'll ride bikes with you guys.
Okay. That's good. So I mentioned this couple that we had dinner with last night and the fellow in particular. And I've told this story, I'm sure, a million times. But he made me think of it in a different way, which had never occurred to me before. So I'll try to make the story brief because I probably have told it who knows how many times.
Okay.
But years ago, I got a chance to be the male lead in a play, Hello Dolly, the musical on Fifth Avenue.
Yes.
And it was very cool. I was very excited. It was a lot of fun. I was getting ready for the play, and I decided I am going to be the one person that shows up on the first day of rehearsals, and I'm going to already know all my lines. I'm going to know the lyrics to all the songs I have to do. I'll be the one guy, the one player that is ready to go. And I told my wife this. She said, yeah, you know what? I think we should go on a cruise. I said, what? I got this play coming up in 2 weeks. She said, that's what we're going to go on a cruise. Going to take a little Mexican cruise. It's only going to be a week long. Goes down, stops in Puerto Vallarta and Mazatlan and Cabo. And then that's where we're going to go. I said, no, I can't because I've got this play. She said, okay, here's the deal. And she strikes this deal and says, every morning on the cruise, before you get up and decide you're going to go jog around the deck or go get donuts or whatever, or do both at the same time, we're going to rehearse the play beginning to end so that by the time the week is over, you are going to know that play down cold.
Brilliant plan.
And that was her deal. So I reluctantly agreed. Okay. As long as I feel like I'm practicing and rehearsing, I guess it'll be okay. So we go on this cruise, and sure enough, she does not waver. Every morning she says, well, here we go, we're going to rehearse it. We do the whole play out loud. She does all the other parts. She's reading the script, and I'm trying to memorize my lines for it. And we do it every morning of the cruise. Last morning comes. We're going to come into port later in the day. I get up and I say, I'm heading up on deck, going to get some breakfast. And she said, no, you're not. What? No, we're going to rehearse again. I said, oh, come on. We've done it all week. I really have the play down pretty cold now. I don't think I need to rehearse any further. And she said, nope, our deal was, I said, I remember the deal. So anyway, we go ahead and I reluctantly go through the whole play with her one more time.
Okay.
And then she says, hang on a second. I got to go use the restroom. So while she's gone, I notice there's some crying going on. Appears to be just outside of our window. We have these little balconies, a little lanais, and we're 9 stories up from the ocean on this huge cruise ship. And so I step onto the lanai, and the crying is coming from my left, and I look around this little barrier that's between the two rooms, and there's a woman who's pulled a chair up and is sitting on the railing. And 9 stories up, and she's looking down. She's disconsolate. She's weeping, and she's looking down at the ocean. Well, Patty comes out of the bathroom, and I back up, and I say, hey, take a look out there, and let me know if you think what is going on is what I think is going on. So she looks around, and she comes back and says, yep, we got a jumper,
God.
All right.
Oh,
we got
my
a jumper.
God. Oh, my God.
So I began telling this story to this guy last night. And he starts chuckling as I tell him there's somebody's trying to jump off the ship.
He starts laughing?
Yeah.
What?
Okay, well, that's kind of peculiar. But I don't ask him why he's laughing. I just continue with the story. And the way the story goes is that my wife tries to comfort this woman and does, eventually gets a hold of her hand. And meanwhile, I'm running down the ship like a madman trying to find ship personnel who are going to come in and get into her room and pull her off the ledge there. Mm-hmm. And long story short, they eventually do. They get into the room. Turns out they told us later that she had gotten married. They were on she and her husband were on a honeymoon cruise. They got into such a big fight that personnel had to separate them and put them in separate rooms on different ends of the ship. Wow. So that's why she was there.
Oh, my God.
So my friend, who's laughing about this story initially, says, oh, well, here's what I thought. Here's what I thought. I thought this woman got so damn sick and tired of listening to you do this Hello Dolly play every damn morning that she said, that's it. I'm going to kill myself.
Oh, my God.
And maybe he's right. I never, you know, I assumed, I assumed she was despondent because of the fight she had with her new husband. Maybe I was the cause of her urge to jump from 9 stories.
And maybe she and her husband were fighting because of you and that play.
Yeah. I just thought, you know, that's an insight I never occurred to me. That I was the reason for her wanting to end.
Oh my gosh.
Baby, let's cruise away from here.
also have to say that even in the midst of it, I was thinking this, and I hate to confess this, but
what?
I'm thinking, I might get a free cruise out of this.
Oh, for saving someone's life?
For saving someone's life.
Oh.
In fact, we never heard a word from anybody. We got the impression that this is a regular occurrence on these cruises. Some people...
Are you kidding me?
Actually go on cruises to, they decided I don't want to live anymore, and I'm going to do it this way. And apparently it happens often. I don't know how often is often, but...
I would do it on the last day, though. I would drink as much as I could.
Yeah.
I'd eat all the food. I'd do it all. And then, because you don't want to do it on the first day.
No, it's too expensive,
Well,
might as well get your money's worth.
That's
out
what
of
I'm
it.
Saying is,
yeah. No, I think.
Oh,
right.
I don't mean to make light of that. That's terrible.
No, it's
like
not.
That.
It's not, yeah. It's the idea that someone's, going to pass away is discomforting.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I felt when I heard that Rick Davies of Supertramp has passed away at the age of 81.
Did he jump off a cruise ship?
No, but he jumped into rock and roll, and they had a lot of hits. He worked with another guy named Roger Hodgson, and Rick Davies and Roger Hodgson were kind of like Lennon and McCartney. They squabbled. They argued over whose song was better and who would write what. But Rick Davies, the one who's passed away, but he also played the Wurlitzer piano, and that was one of the signature sounds of Supertramp. You remember the songs? There's Goodbye Stranger.
Goodbye Stranger, it's been nice. Hope you find a paradise.
Bloody Well Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you're bloody well right. You got a bloody right to say. Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
And then better known songs like Give a Little Bit.
Give a little bit. Oh, give a little bit of your love to me.
The Logical Song.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful. A miracle. Oh, it was beautiful, magical.
Take the Long Way Home. That was all from their Breakfast in America album, Rick Davies. I'm sorry I got on that tangent there, but the woman trying to jump off the ship reminded me in a strange sort of way of Rick Davies.
Yeah, I can see why.
Yeah. Hey, do you believe in, have any belief in?
Okay, no, I don't believe in anything.
You're a nihilist.
Yes. I'm a realist. That's what I am.
I saw an article in the paper the other day. Yes, I still read papers. I'm the one guy that still does it.
I love it.
It talked about how Americans in particular have a growing belief in astrology. 3 out of 10 people admit now that they did something in the past year, whether it was palm reading or psychic readings, fortune telling, but they engaged in some kind of activity, roughly built around this idea that astrology is a real science, which is ridiculous, of course. But a lot of younger people are more likely to do this now.
So you're saying there's an increase in it? I would think there would be a decrease in it. I mean, there's no evidence to support any, and there's no scientific anything that supports any of it. I don't know.
Well, here's my theory, Elise. I think, and we're seeing this and have for the last several years, people are diving all over conspiracies of every kind.
Yeah.
There's a belief in things that are totally illogical, all because somebody said it and then it spreads and there's no credence to it, but yet it's kind of attractive to believe in something that,
of course,
isn't even provable. Astrology is like that. I think people are,
looking for answers,
in reasons. Any way they can.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I believe that that's part of why people are so attracted to religion. Things happen for a reason, or it's all in God's plan or whatever, because it's difficult to sit with things that you cannot explain or control. So right. I think that this sort of pseudoscience of astrology fits the bill too for folks who aren't religious. They say they're spiritual, but I hate to be such a hard nose about it, but I just think all of it is a bunch of bunk. It's just all, it's amusing, but man, they make money off of that stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you can always find a money trail to something that
absolutely
is otherwise. Why is this a thing? And then you say, oh, there's money leading right to it. Now mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah.
Well, here's the other thing is as silly, at least in my opinion, and apparently yours, as we think astrology is. It's like those super eight balls, you know, like believing in that sort of stuff.
Hey, now, wait a minute. I didn't say I didn't believe.
That one is real, but the astrology stuff.
Right.
But all I will tell you about that is that whenever, and I would always do it reluctantly, but a producer would book a soothsayer or a medium on our show.
Yes.
And the phones would light up.
I mean,
people love that crap.
I know.
I finally said, okay, if this is what they want, then we'll provide it at least occasionally.
Yes.
And I remember we had a woman in the studio one time who could see what others cannot see. And she could see your aura. Apparently all of us have an aura around us, almost like a halo, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And that reveals our personality, perhaps uh-huh. our future, our character, all of that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so she comes on our show and we're live and we're in the studio and she stares at me for a moment and then she says, oh boy, I don't like what I'm seeing here. And I go, what is it? She says, you, my friend, have a cracked aura.
I remember this.
I have a what? Your aura is cracked. So I'm looking down to see if my belt is coming loose or something. But she's looking above my head, and there, whatever an aura is, apparently I had a defect in mine.
Yeah.
I said, well, what does that mean? She says, I don't know what it means, but it's something you should worry about. And that's all she said.
I don't know what it means, but you need to worry about it.
Yeah. It's not normal to have a cracked aura. Your aura was fine.
Oh, I know. Oh, I know that. I didn't need her to tell me that.
Well, and I've worried about it ever since. I don't know. If you do have a cracked aura, can you get it repaired? I don't know. That guy, what's his name?
Hi, Phil Swift here for Flex Seal.
That guy and his Flex Seal could repair an aura.
Just a quick shot and Flex Seal instantly fills cracks and holes.
By the way, I love giving false information to people lately.
You might as well join the crowd. That's what our current political administration's doing. So
exactly.
Just jump on in. I'm going to start doing that too. I'm just going to make shit up. I'm just going to make it up and just go for it. So yeah, what do you got there, Pat?
I started to laugh. Let me do my laugh again.
Okay.
I'm not happy with that either. Oh shoot.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Dang it.
So
dang.
What? What do you mean?
So my rumor is that, you know that guy that does those ads for Flex Seal?
Uh-huh.
Turns out he is Taylor Swift's brother.
No, he's not. Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And then just see where that rumor goes and if it comes back to you again. Yeah.
Okay, you just gave me a great idea. You know what I'm going to do?
What?
Did you know? I don't tell people this, but did you know that I am related to Jodie Foster?
Lisa Foster, Jodie Foster.
Yeah. We're fraternal twins. Not identical, because clearly we don't look alike.
My great-great-great-grandfather, Stephen Foster.
Oh, Susanna, oh, don't you cry for me. I come from Alabama with a banjo on my knee.
The beauty of this is people will not, go, nuh-uh. They'll go, really?
Yeah.
And they're not going to check it. Are they going to Google it right then and there?
Probably not.
Probably not.
If it's something, people, I think we love having information that we don't think everybody else has.
Right.
We can't wait to spill it. We can't wait to tell us. Being in the know, it's what a delightful feeling that is.
Yep.
And so I think that all falls into the same astrology thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Guess what? I read this too, that there is a wide discrimination in China right now against Virgos in particular.
Oh, what did they do?
I don't know what they did, but they don't like them. And being a Virgo myself, now I'm worried. I was, planning a trip to China, as you know, but now I'm thinking, maybe I'll just go to Wajimaya's or someplace.
What I just looked up here? And you've got a birthday coming up, too. And I have your birthday present sitting right here. Wait till you get it. So listen.
I can hear it breathing.
Listen, in particular, some people intentionally avoid Virgos. Because Virgos, which is literally translated as virgin in Chinese, so no wonder they don't like you.
The virgin, touched for the very first time.
Our stereotype is having, Pat.
What?
You want me to read
a cracked aura, right?
Yeah. No, because they have disagreeable personalities, such as being critical.
That's bullshit.
Listen to me. Fussy, picky, obsessive.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on. I would just lie and tell them you're a Leo. People love Leos. I'm a Leo. They love Leos.
Hmm. That's a lion, right?
Apparently, rawr.
I saw you eating a zebra last time I saw you in person. I was wondering about that.
Rawr.
Okay, I normally we would continue on this podcast, but my joke is so long that I'm gonna need several minutes to tell it.
That was me slapping my knees together.
Oh, I thought you had a trained seal in the room with you.
I'm so excited. Okay. You told me this earlier. So
long
joke. Okay. We're just going to sit back and enjoy. Grab your favorite beverage, whoever's listening to this.
It's a joke that never comes out the same way.
Okay.
And so
now
here we
you're
go.
Not reading this. You usually have your book of jokes that
I,
you read
I do
from.
Have a book of jokes. I read, I paraphrase from it, but this time I got nothing in front of me. I'm remembering this joke as it was told to me. I might screw it up because I haven't practiced it, but I tend to like long jokes. Some people like one-liners.
No.
I like long, because I like stories, and I like story jokes.
So. I do, too.
All right. Enough setup. Here we go.
Okay.
I'm going to give this, before we stop the music for a second, I want to give this.
Wow. Man, that's terrible. We were all geared up.
Okay. Here is, I'm going to personalize this joke for you. Okay. So start the music again. Here we go. There was a very, very famous magician that was the talk of the world, if not the town. You could not buy a ticket to see this magician. His name? The great Fosterini.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yes, him. It was a him. Apparently. Well, the great Fosterini would do, conventional magic tricks, but then his act would build, and then his magic would become more incredible, more unbelievable, more crowd-pleasing, and finally people could just say, I can't believe it. How did he do that?
Yeah.
That's not possible.
Wow.
So one night, on one particular night, the great Fosterini, because his name was originally Stephen Foster, so he just shortened it to Fosterini. No relation, by the way. He says to the audience, I'm going to use my little device here. This
anything for that. Okay, go
ahead. Well, I'm not just trying. I think it'll add the verisimilitude.
You kind of do, just so you know. You just, you think it's going to be.
Hello.
But you go ahead and you get your little toy out.
Okay. So, in front of this huge audience, the great Fosterini says,
ladies and gentlemen, for my next match,
I'm going to give him a bit of an accent.
You're actually right, Pat. I was way wrong on that. That does add. That's a perfect spot for this.
Oh, it does add? Okay.
Yeah, but add an accent.
I'm going to give him, because magicians have, Well, they don't always have to, but they're more exotic if they have an accent.
Like, not like a Southern accent or a New York accent. Don't do that. That wouldn't be.
Okay. How about Croatian or something like
that? Perfect.
No. Well, I just give some kind of unknown accent.
Do something European or something.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure for me to be here. I have traveled the world, and I've never had an audience as wonderful as you.
He's patronizing the audience, of course.
I can
they
hear
love
that.
They're eating it up.
Oh, I can hear it.
Now I'm going to do a magic trick that I have never attempted before. And for it, I will need the help of an assistant. I would look for a volunteer, anyone in the audience, anyone, raise your hand if you'd like to join me on stage and volunteer to help me with this bit of magic.
Several hands go up in the air, but one is from a little man sitting near the front row.
A little man, and did you say?
He's slight. He's, okay. He's not little. He's not big. He's just a normal, medium-sized man. He volunteers, and the great Foscarini points him out and ushers him onto the stage.
Okay.
It is a pleasure. Should I continue using the echo?
No, I think you can. Can you dial the echo back a bit? It sounds like it's on high.
Let me see. It doesn't. It's okay now. How about that?
It's
almost off or on. Hello.
Okay. Well, I'm having a tough time hearing what the great Foscarini is actually saying.
Okay. I'm going to ditch the echo.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to ditch the echo now.
So he brings this little man on stage.
Okay.
And he says, "What is your name?" He says,
"My name is Marvin. Marvin Wallaby."
Marvin. Are you any relation to the animal, the wallaby?
No, just. That's happened to be my name.
Okay. Let me ask you this, Mr. Kangaroo.
Wallaby.
Oh, sorry. Mr. Wallaby. Have you ever seen my act before?
Oh, yes, sir. I've seen you several times. And you're always astounding. And I always scratch my head because I don't know how you do half the things you do.
Well, that's very kind of you. I'm going to ask you to do something for me that you might recoil from initially. But believe me, this is a trick I have practiced. I know what I'm doing. Do not be afraid and do not be shy.
Okay, I guess I can help.
All right. Now, do you see what I'm holding in my hand?
Yeah, it looks like a baseball bat.
It is a baseball bat. It's a Louisville Slugger. Willie Mays autograph. It's a beautiful piece of wood. Examine it, please.
Oh, yeah. That's a real baseball bat. That's a hard wood on there. Is that oak?
I don't know, but you can confirm that it is a hard baseball bat.
Oh, yes, sir. Oh, yes.
All right. Now, I'm going to put my head down on this table. And what I want you to do is pull that baseball bat back and hit me on the head as hard as you possibly can with the bat.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no, I can't do that, sir.
Now, listen. Listen, I told you, I'm a magician. I know what I'm doing. This is all calculated. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, but still, I don't know if I'd be
Well, maybe I'll get another volunteer.
No. I'll do it.
Okay, now don't hold back. I want you to pretend like you're trying to hit a home run and hit me on my noggin as hard as you possibly can.
Okay.
So the audience is pensive, as you can imagine, and quiet.
I'm pensive.
Anticipating.
Yes.
So he puts his head down on the table, the great Foscarini does, and the little man with the baseball bat, he brings the bat up behind his head, so he's really got it cocked way back, and he brings it down as hard as he can on the head of Foscarini. His head falls open like a coconut, Lisa.
Oh, gross!
Yes, it's gross. The audience is screaming. They're repulsed. Some of them are vomiting. It's just awful. They quickly bring some men out with a big sheet so they can hide, the Foscarini's, the impact and everything from the audience.
Oh, God.
Although they're a little late because he's...
We want to vomit.
Then they bring an ambulance and they bring a medical crew out and they put him on a gurney and then he's wheeled out of the theater. And straight to a hospital.
Oh, my
At the hospital, the doctors spend an unprecedented 13 hours working on him.
Hold on. What happened to Marvin?
Who knows? Who cares?
Oh.
Or Marvin's not in the story anymore.
Okay. Did he just go home?
He just apparently went home. And he kept the bat, too, by the way.
Okay. All right. So the medical team was working for how many hours on this broken
13,
head?
13 hours.
13 hours. Wow.
And then at the end of it all, they pronounce, they say, we've done all we can do. Yeah, there's nothing more we can do.
Oh, my God.
Well, as these things go, Lisa, for a few days, a lot of well-wishers drop by the hospital. Not that the great Foscarini could hear or see any of them. He was in a coma. He was unconscious.
Oh, I thought he was dead, so he's alive.
No, he's not dead, but he's on life support. And
okay.
He's there. He's in the hospital for about 4 months.
Wow.
And people come by. But you know how it goes, Lisa. Pretty soon, nobody's coming by anymore.
Of course.
And then he's just day after day. And then they transfer him to a, you know, kind of a rehab place where he's got a nice room, but not that he knows because, again, he's not even conscious or awake.
Right.
But it's a nice room. He's by himself. Nobody comes to visit because nobody, you know, we all move on with our lives.
Right. And everybody who was going to visit him have already visited him and
it's
all done. Okay.
So he's in this rehab place for about 2 years. Two long years.
Wow.
And pretty much the same nurse comes in every day. She looks at him. She changes his bedpan and, you know, all the things. Well, he can't even use a bedpan because he's unconscious. So it's just awful, you know, and she feeds him intravenously and it goes on for 2 years and there's no improvement in a coma.
Mm.
And then one day she says, it's a beautiful day outside. Maybe I'll just open the curtains on his window for a little bit. Let a little sunshine come into the room.
Oh,
what could
nice.
What could it hurt?
Yeah.
So she opens the curtains, some sunlight comes into the room, and she sees the guy's, Foscarini's eyes flicker. He flickers. And then pretty soon his eyes wide open.
What?
And then as she continues to look at him, he sits up in his bed. And then from his bed, he whirls around and pretty soon he's standing on his bed. And he throws his hands wide and says, ta-da!
Oh, my God, I hate that joke.
Should it be longer?
Yes.
Here's the best, worst version I could find of this song.
One talk over the line, sweet Jesus. One talk over the line. Sitting downtown in a railway station.
Thanks for listening to Peculiar Podcast.
Hey, goodbyes.
Join Pat and Lisa online at peculiarpodcast.com.
The gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
And on the Peculiar Podcast Facebook fan page.
Sweet.
On Twitter at Peculiar Podcast, at Mr. Pat Cashman, and at Foster Chick.
Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration.